Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Visit us soon at our new State College location.
This is the Blue White Breakdown, the premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live. Here are your hosts, Bob Flounders and Daniel Gallen.
Hey, Penn State fans, the Blue White Breakdown podcast, Penn Live, Penn State football podcast, is back for the middle edition of the first week in March. Daniel Gallen joining me, Bob Flounders. And Daniel, Penn State basketball season is grinding to maybe a painful halt after what I saw what happened, I think, to that in that Nebraska game. I don't know how you feel about that, but we are getting very close, Daniel, to not only the combine, but the start of Penn State's spring drills. We got some dates announced this week. We will get into that before we talk a little bit about the combine. Dave Jones and I talked about the combine yesterday, but I was going to take a little bit of a different approach with you, because he is not, as Dave is first one to admit, that he's maybe combine season is not his favorite part of the college football season. So we addressed that and proceeded accordingly. He still had some interesting thoughts. But Daniel, you went from Penn State season to recruiting season, which is year round for you. Then you went straight into men's basketball season. It's been an up and down ride, I think, for Penn State men's basketball in the 2021-2022 season. When I didn't realize what that score was, I looked at the Nebraska score. I was like, whoa, don't think a lot of people saw that coming. So how are you? And real quick, just your thoughts on what's next for Penn State men's basketball, and how surprised were you by the fact that they kind of got it handed to them by a Cornhuskers team that just wasn't very good all year?
Yeah, it was Sunday night was one of the weirder results of the year. I mean, they lost by 23. They were down by 32 in the second half. And it really wasn't as close as 23 points as the final score. It was, I don't know, it was unusual. I mean, they were just kind of beaten from the jump, which hasn't happened this year.
Yeah.
Like, they lost big to Indiana. I think in the Indiana game at Indiana, they were down by 29 at halftime. But that was more of a product of Indiana. Just that was an anomaly. They were shooting the lights out.
Yep.
It was the type of thing where you set up the offense so that certain guys get shots that they're not supposed to make, and then they make those shots. And it's kind of like, well, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
Micah Shrewsbury was pretty honest after the game. He really wore it. He said it was his fault. He didn't have been prepared. You know, it was an interesting turnaround where they go from Friday night, senior night, an emotional comeback win over Northwestern, turnaround, have to play Sunday against a Nebraska team that hadn't won on the road, had only one Big Ten win coming into the game. And I think that there was a little bit of a letdown there.
Yeah.
But Micah Shrewsbury talked yesterday, kind of reflecting on the loss. He said Brad Stevens texted him first thing Monday morning. I was going to talk about his support season. So there's two games left: at Illinois Thursday night, at Rutgers Sunday. Both of those are going to be tough games, but those are also two pretty inconsistent opponents. So it'll be interesting to see how they finish up. The big thing for them right now is they're in 10th place in the Big Ten. They need to stay at 10th place to avoid that, you know, the Wednesday of the Big Ten tournament in Indy. They're a game ahead of Northwestern and Maryland.
Right.
They have the tiebreak over Northwestern. Maryland has a tiebreak over Penn State if it comes down to a tie. Watching that Nebraska team play, with the talent that they had, I was kind of like, with Bryce McGowan's, I was like, you should be able to run into at least three Big Ten wins with someone like that on your team. But they got Ohio State last night,
right?
So we'll see what Indy has in store for us.
Daniel, just one quick thought, just from somebody who has not covered men's basketball for Penn State, but following the coverage, following your stories, talking a little bit with Dave Jones about it, it just seems like this year Penn State was a team that, whether they were playing good teams or bad teams, they were built to live in a world in the 50s or 60s as far as maybe a game score, and maybe not the most dynamic offense in the Big Ten. But, you know, they also seem like they were, and I don't mean this as a negative, but they were really, really good at grinding. They were really, really good at hanging in there. I know they scored a lot of points in some other games, but when all that stuff doesn't kind of go your way and you're away from home and you find yourself against a team that's just, you know, playing so well, can it get away from a team like Penn State, even though they beat Iowa and even though they beat Michigan State and two really impressive victories? Is it easier for a team to kind of see a game get away from them when maybe they're really more comfortable in a defensive-minded game, in a game where, you know, you're going to try and first one to 50, first one to 55, first one to 62 wins? Or do you just think they might have hit like a physical and mental wall against a team that was tired of losing?
They kind of let Nebraska dictate things from the jump, and I think that's where it got away from them. Micah Shrewsbury kind of said as much afterwards. I mean, the tip-off was just a mess, and they commit a foul, you know, 2 seconds into the game, and then it was just kind of – and then they had a really bad turnover that led to a three-pointer, and it was just kind of – it was one of those things where absolutely everything that could go wrong went wrong, and they've been pretty fortunate that for a team that – it's a team that's talent deficient when you look at the Big Ten as a whole. I mean, I think that it's clear you look at Nebraska's roster and there's at least one player on Nebraska who would be the best player on Penn State, and Bryce McGowan's. And so I think that they were really designed this year to limit the number of possessions, slow things down, force the other team to pretty much be perfect. But when you do that, you also have to be perfect. And when you don't necessarily have talent to do it, that gets really hard too. Micah Shrewsbury acknowledged that kind of like, this isn't how he wants to play.
Yeah.
That he is adjusting to what he has. He has a veteran group, which I think helps a lot. There's 7 fourth or fifth year guys plus Seth Lundy, a junior.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, you have some stability there, some composure. You know, it's the type of thing where when it gets away from you, when you play like this, it can really get away from you. They've reeled teams back before. They did that to Michigan State. They were down by 13. And they've done it in some other games, but it is kind of a thing where they don't necessarily have kind of the guy who can take over and make things happen when things aren't really going right. Sam Sessoms and Jalen Pickett have at times done that. Seth Lundy has had some good games, but they don't really have that guy on a nightly basis. So it was just kind of one of those things where I think that you have to give them a lot of credit for, I mean, it's honestly a surprise that this is really the first game that has been a wire to wire, everything gone wrong.
Yeah.
They've had some bad halves, some bad stretches, but I think that that's really a testament to Micah Shrewsbury. And I think it kind of shows the progress this program's made.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about the wins that they've had over Michigan State and Iowa, and they took Wisconsin, a good Wisconsin team, I think, to the wire. Against Purdue, did they hang tough?
Yeah. They lost to Purdue by 7, Wisconsin by 2. Yeah.
Your point is valid. I just think that sometimes you just don't have a lot of you run out of bullets, I guess. And it's you know, you can't always expect if another team gets you down 11 or 12 that you're going to be able to have with the roster construction you're talking about that you're always going to be able to answer. Because more often than not, they're definitely not the most talented team on the floor. And it's going to be real interesting. I think you're going to learn even a little bit more about how this team really, really feels about themselves against these next two games, because those are two really tough games they have coming up, it sounds like, to close out their regular season. And I have a sense, though, that seeing how they played all year, they will probably come back and they will probably finish the season strong. Whether that's enough to beat either one of those teams, I don't know, but I don't think you're going to see a blowout again.
No, and also, too, they beat Rutgers by 17 back in January, and that was before Rutgers kind of got hot and beat those four ranked teams in a row. I mean, it's on the road at the arena formerly known as the Rack, now Jersey Mike's Arena.
Yikes.
Which is it's a tough place to play. You've seen a lot of teams go in there and lose, but I think that we're going to see kind of a rebound performance against Illinois tomorrow night. Obviously, Kofi Coburn is a tough task inside. I mean, John Hara is going to have his hands full. Getting Greg Lee back, the other forward, helps, but it's going to be tough. Everyone was kind of well aware of what they were getting into this year and how difficult it would be with this team. But I think they're in a position to really make things interesting. And if they can avoid that first day of the Big Ten tournament to kind of get an extra day of rest and kind of not have to play an extra game, I mean, they're a team that could be, that wouldn't be a surprise if they make it to Friday, give a team a scare that ends up playing on Saturday or Sunday.
Yep. Okay, Daniel, before we get to the combine, I mean, it's the combine, a lot of the combine stuff, the interview stuff has already begun, but the first real testing day is Thursday. Penn State's Jahan Dotson is going to be in a wideout group that goes on Thursday. But before we get to that, real quick, let's go over real quick some of the key dates that Penn State has announced for their spring season. Obviously, the combine is going to run through the weekend. We now know the date of Penn State's first day of practice. That's going to be Monday, or I shouldn't say the first day of practice. We're going to get a chance to talk to James Franklin on Monday, March 21st. I think that might be the first day of practice. Penn State's pro day will be March 24th up in State College. And that'll be interesting as well. And you and I will be in State College. They're holding their annual end of winter conditioning press conference with Chuck. It'll be Chuck Lose this year. It won't be Dwight Gault, but we'll get to hear from him for about 10 or 15 minutes. We'll get to see some of the guys go through their paces. We'll get to see some of the young guys. Of those three dates is one. I'm always excited about the first time we get to talk to James and if he says something interesting, but I'm also a little interested to hear, because there's a big change at Penn State, the new strength coach, interested to see kind of what he has to say, who he talks about. Dwight was very, very, he was always happy to talk about 18 guys in 5 minutes, and I always thought that was pretty funny. But I'm just as excited to hear from the new strength coach. How about you?
Yeah, I think there's something to watch on every single one of those days. Obviously, in the past, Dwight Gault, he's been doing this forever. He kind of, you knew what you were going to get from him, and you didn't really have to ask him that much about himself or what he was doing. And I think it'll be interesting because obviously we want to know, who has really come along, who's been impressing in the weight room all winter. But I also think that we need to get to know Chuck Lose. I mean, we need to know what he's doing differently, how he's tweaking things, kind of how he sees his vision kind of, because he's worked with Dwight Gault for a long time. He goes back to Vanderbilt, but it's his own thing. He has the chance to put his stamp on it, and you kind of don't get these opportunities too often. So I'm really interested to hear from him there. Obviously, anytime we can talk to James is a good opportunity. And I think that I'm interested to see kind of how he sets the tone for the spring, especially after how last season ended and kind of what's ahead. Got asked some questions about the quarterbacks.
There
plenty of people are going to want to know. And then obviously pro day, to kind of, someone like Ellis Brooks, who's not at the combine, we get to see how he tests. We get to see if someone else who didn't go to the combine surprises us. And, at home, the guys are a little bit more comfortable. You read about kind of what they have to go through at the combine and how it's not exactly the most optimal, conditions for them to test at their best. So, maybe in Haluba Hall, it's a little bit different, than at Lucas Oil Stadium. So, I'm kind of interested to see, seeing Brandon Smith test. That's something that's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah, and I was going to say you were on a conference call, at least one conference call with some NFL draft analysts, and I saw some of the stories that you were writing. What were the most intriguing answers to questions about Penn State kids in your mind? Because I know that you covered a bunch of kids, and I think the Penn State fan base knows that Jahan Dotson is going to be a if not a first round pick, he'll go very quickly in the second round, and he could run in the 4.3s. He's not the biggest receiver; he's one of actually the smallest receivers that's kind of mentioned in like the top 50 players. But the production has been there. But as far as like, I think he talked to, I believe, was it Daniel Jeremiah, maybe some other guys that are really, really good at kind of breaking down film and assessing players. Who were the players, and what were the comments that really, really kind of resonated with you when you talk about Penn State's combine list that is at 8 and it could have easily been at 9?
Yeah, so I was on the call with Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Media last week, former Eagles, Ravens scout, a lot of really good insight. The four players that came up over the course of talking with him, he did bring up Dotson specifically when he was asked a question about the Patriots picking, I think they're at 23 or 21. And he said he compared Dotson to Chris Olave as kind of in the back half of the first rounds. I think that based on what Jeremiah said, I think Dotson is probably going to go in that 20 to 35 range. He said Dotson has the best hands in the draft, and he says that he thinks Dotson will run in the 4.3s. I think up on the board in the Penn State facility, Dotson's run a 4.33. But the thing is that it's his size. Dotson's 5'11", 184. That's what he was listed at last year. That's the lightest of kind of that upper group of receivers. And I think he's the shortest. I haven't my story. I forget. So it'll be interesting to see. He said he had a third round grade on Jesse Luketta. That'll be interesting to see in terms of versatility. He called Luketta a true positionless player. Mostly you hear that in kind of the linebacker safety hybrid as opposed to that defensive end linebacker hybrid. So that's kind of interesting to see. But I think the most interesting things that Daniel Jeremiah had to say were about Brandon Smith and Rasheed Walker. And I asked him specifically about Brandon Smith because we've talked about it. He's going to test well. Five-star athlete. And then it's kind of how do you reconcile that with some of the inconsistencies that we saw on the field last year. And Jeremiah said that he has heard that Brandon Smith is going to test off the charts. He's going to create some buzz. But there is some stuff on film that he doesn't really like that Brandon Smith will need to clean up. And then unprompted, Daniel Jeremiah brought up Rasheed Walker, the left tackle. Rasheed was hurt late last year, was on crutches at the Outback Bowl. So I forget what day he's scheduled to meet the media in Indy. So who knows if he'll work out or how much he'll do, but he'll at least get the chance to go through the interview process with the teams and kind of, I think, maybe explain some of the things that went wrong last year. But Jeremiah said that you look at the Michigan game, which was the last game that Rasheed played, and he said that gives you the kind of the two extremes. Of where you had good reps against Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo, who are going to be first round picks. Mm-hmm. And then you had the really bad reps against those guys. So he said that Rasheed is a boom or bust player. It'll be a really big situational fit for him. If he can land somewhere where he has a good offensive line coach.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent 3 years around the Eagles and Jeff Stoutland just was a miracle worker. In terms of just what he got out of a bunch of undrafted free agents, and someone like Jordan Mailata, who'd never played the game before. That was something that kind of came to mind where if Rasheed Walker, I mean, we know he has the physical gifts. If he can end up with a coach who is like that, like Jeff Stoutland, that could be a huge boost for his career. So, you know, it's up in the air, I think, given his physical status, what'll happen, but he's someone that's going to be really interesting during the pre-draft process. And I think that for a lot of Penn State fans who are more college football fans than NFL fans, when they hear his name in April, I think that a lot of people are going to be raising their eyebrows. But there's a lot of potential there that I think NFL teams like.
Yeah, I was combing through the some of the stuff on NFL.com, and they have NFL.com has their own talent evaluator. He's got a write-up on every Penn State player. And what he said about Rasheed Walker is a lot of what you said, coveted player, played well at times in his career. The thing that interested me the most is he felt like Rasheed Walker's strengths were more against the run than against the pass because he struggled against, you know, really athletic edge rushers. And there were some athletic edge rushers in the Big Ten. He said he wouldn't be surprised if he either moved to right tackle or even kicked inside the guard. And trying to imagine Rasheed at guard, I mean, I guess anything is possible, but he was pretty adamant. And Lance Dierlein's a pretty well-respected guy. He was pretty adamant that he would not be surprised if whoever drafted him gave him a long look, maybe either at right tackle or even inside at guard. But man, when Rasheed was healthy and he wanted to play, I thought he played pretty well. But there were some games, I'm not saying it was all his fault, but that Michigan game right away, Michigan's front four just took over that game, and both those tackles just, I thought, were just in over their head. So he's going to be a polarizing player. But Brandon Smith, to me, is going to be the most polarizing player for Penn State. And I think he might be the most polarizing player at the combine if he tests as well as people think he's going to test, because he is as big as Micah Parsons, I think. And he's going to be, I mean, damn near as fast. I mean, you could see his straight line speed in games. Where he could run down some plays maybe that he missed. But at that size, if you can run low 4.5 or you crack the 4.4s at 245 pounds, man. I was telling Dave, you know, all 32 teams don't have to love Brandon Smith. It just takes one or two just to look at that guy and say, well, wait, we can fix maybe some of those issues. And I think he can really help his draft position.
This is the Blue White Breakdown.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Visit us at Curaleaf.com or stop in to see us at any of our locations, including our new State College dispensary located at 1248 South Atherton Street. Let's talk medical marijuana and let our confidence become yours.
I want to go over two players with you, though, for the combine that I think are very interesting. Arnold Ebiketie, I think we know how good of a player he is, but one of them is Tariq Castro Fields because he did go to the Senior Bowl. To me, he was a guy that he was a hard guy for me to kind of get a read on at Penn State for a couple of reasons. And the other player is Jaquan Brisker, because I think I'm just curious how much the time off, like his last game was the Michigan State game. I don't think he went to the Senior Bowl. So I'm curious how much that time off has helped that upper body injury, because it was clearly an issue. It clearly impacted him. Daniel, I'm just curious what he will be able to do testing wise at the combine and how he'll interview and how much teams are going to want to ask him, because he was a warrior. He played through a very painful injury. It was very clear from the beginning of the season, but I'm just wondering if that injury is fixed and teams feel like it will not recur. How much is that going to help him? Because he was at the very top, I think, of Bruce Feldman's freaks list, I think, prior to last year as well. And I just think that as much as Brandon Smith could test, I think Brisker might be right there with him, test well.
Yeah, I think Brisker is someone who was really, he's kind of, at Penn State, he was kind of known more for the intangibles and his playmaking on the field, as opposed to someone like Brandon Smith, who was kind of the testing guy, the physical tools. So I think that this will be a cool opportunity. If Brisker is healthy enough to test, I think it'll be a cool opportunity for him to kind of showcase the athleticism that you can pair with some of the instincts and the intangible things that kind of made him the glue on the back end. But I think he's supposed to test on Sunday. He'll do media interviews Saturday then, so we should have a good idea. But I think Brisker has a good opportunity to kind of maybe work his way into the back end of the first round. I know that he was kind of it's been kind of back and forth, where there's kind of those players every year where I feel like I always remember this, the DeSean Jackson year, where every single mock draft had the Eagles picking DeSean Jackson at, like, I think it was like number 19 or something. They had him as his first round pick. Then they get him in the second round. Mm-hmm. And I think I've seen that a couple times with Brisker and your Cowboys, where he's kind of the trendy, like, first round pick for the Cowboys at the back end of that round. And then you look at other mock drafts and they have him getting to the end of the second round. So a lot of it has to do with how teams value safety too, which is kind of an interesting circle to square there. Yeah. Depending on the system, what teams want. I mean, the Rams just won the Super Bowl with 7th round pick Nick Scott and Eric Weddle, who was retired. So it's an interesting position to kind of evaluate. Right. But Brisker is someone where you've only heard good things about him. I think the play will match up with the testing numbers and the interview things. So I think that he should, I think, work his way up to the top of day two. And Tariq Castro Fields, complete wild card.
Yes. Maryland guy, Daniel, from your
Riverdale Baptist. I was there in February 1st, 2017, when he announced his commitment to the Nittany Lions. I really do not have a read on him. There's an NFL.com mock draft that had him as a second round pick, which I was very surprised to see that. But I think that Castro Fields could definitely work his way up into that fourth round spot. I mean, he plays a premium position. The physical tools are there. Mm-hmm. He has the size that teams want. He's long. He has some good things on tape, but I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like the production wasn't necessarily there. The health stuff is a question, given how that was kind of you know, I mean, Penn State, the way that they handled it, really keeping things kind of under wraps. And so you don't necessarily know maybe what he was playing through. I mean, he didn't play in the Outback Bowl. So I really don't have a read for him. And I guess this is kind of what the combine is for. We're going to see where he stacks up in the different percentiles for his testing and his measurements. And we'll be able to kind of slot that in. And he was a good media interview. So I assume that he'll be able to interview well with the teams in the room, but I really have no idea. Like, kind of like you said, it only takes one team to fall in love with him. I was on a conference call with Mel Kiper where Mel Kiper misspoke when asked about draft eligible Nittany Lions last year and brought up Tariq and said that he saw him as a fourth round pick. And then Mel Kiper called me right after to be like, oh, sorry, I missed
you.
I was like, I got you. Like,
I love Mel.
I'll file that away for next year. Another Maryland guy.
Sure. Definitely. You can tell it every time he talks.
Tariq has some work to do, but he'll be one where it'll be a bit of a surprise where he goes.
To your point, Daniel, I think talent wise, just in a vacuum, if you said second round pick, I would agree with you. My two questions for Tariq, having seen him play, durability, physicality. I don't think there's any question he can cover, but in the NFL, you got to be able to get somebody to the ground. I mean, it's a game where they're going to spread you out and you're not always going to be able to knock the ball down. And if you get beat, you got to be recovered. You got to be able to make a tackle against, you know, some just phenomenal freak athletes. And you can learn a lot about a corner at the combine, but they don't test for willingness to get a guy to the ground. And I think I think on tape, that might be the one thing. If I was a scout or if I was a general manager, I want to ask him about, you know, what happened on this play. And also, you know, where were you for the last six games of 2020? Not so much, you know, he wants to opt out of the Outback Bowl. That's an entirely different story, even though he was on the field for some reason. But I think that he is, as in terms of a coverage player, a guy that's 6 foot, you know, almost 200 pounds. There is no question he can do a lot of good things, but is it enough just to be able to shadow a receiver? What happens when he catches the ball? He's going to get drafted, and I'm sure some teams are going to have a higher opinion of Tariq than others, but those are just the two things that I don't know how you're going to have to trust the tape. You're not going to be able to really learn any insights, I think, at the combine. But to your point, I think it's always a good gamble on a physical talent like Tariq Castro Fields, because he is an NFL corner. There's no question he's got NFL size, but I just don't know what we're going to see from him. There were times I thought he played really well at Penn State, and there were times that I just thought he didn't. You know, really, as we close up this edition of the Blue White Breakdown podcast, Daniel, Brandon Smith, Rashid Walker, Tariq Castro Fields, there's a couple common denominators, I think, with all three of those in terms of physical specimens who've looked very good at times at Penn State and in good in big games for Penn State. But there's also the other side of it and the inconsistency. The more erratic the data is, the least likely you're ready to pull the trigger early on a kid like that. So we'll see about the testing. They're going to have to test extremely well. And I think Brandon might, but man, it's going to make for a fascinating draft. I really do, because there are going to be some players that dip in this draft, and it might be some Penn State guys, and they're going to be some guys that go way earlier. I remember when Troy Apke got drafted a couple years ago by the Redskins, and he ran like 4.3 at the combine, and Troy was a quality player at Penn State, but I think he went in the fourth round or the third round. I was like, what? And you know, I think he went before Marcus Allen actually, but I just that's the beauty of the draft. It's in the eye of the beholder, and there's a lot at stake. And like you said, sometimes you can find some really good players in the sixth and seventh round, and sometimes you can reach on the players in the second and third round. And if you reach too many times, your team's just going to – it's not going to do well. So I'm real curious to see where all these guys land. Ellis Brooks could get drafted as well. So you could talk about 9 Penn State players getting drafted, Daniel, is wild for a team that finished 7-6. But that could be where we're headed. I'm excited to see how the combine plays out. I know you are as well. It really gets underway on Thursday. You got some basketball to cover. So, and Daniel will be back with Dustin Hockensmith a little bit later this week with another installment of the Blue White Breakdown. Next week, it's just going to be all about what we think about the combine, what was said about Penn State players, who ran well, who, you know, who looks like you, they might not go quite as high. But I try to remember the last time Penn State had 8 players at the combine. I think it's been a while. So something for a Penn State fan to kind of look at every day this week, especially since there's no baseball. Who knows when it's going to start? It's a sore spot for a lot of people, fans, some writers I know, and I don't blame them. But this is a football podcast, so we're going to leave the baseball talk to someone else. How's that, Daniel?
Sounds great to me, Bob.
All right, we'll be back to talk to you guys next week.
This has been the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.